Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello Ramblers, Andy here, and Ramble Meets today has not just one interviewee, but two. It's me in conversation with Michael Essien and Yoann Giroux, who you will all remember, I'm sure, from their glittering football careers, not least in the Premier League. Michael Essien with Chelsea, Real Madrid, Milan, Lyon, and I managed to not just ask him questions on Lyon and Juninho, which was quite an achievement for me, I thought. Giroux from over a decade at Arsenal, Birmingham, Hamburg, etc., etc. Nowadays, Yoann Giroux has just joined FC Nordsjælland as a player, whereas Michael Essien is there as a coach, or player coach is his official title. Anyway, you might have already heard some of the Nordsjælland story. I hope you have if you listen to Ramble Meets Tom Vernon that was out last week, the chairman of Nordsjælland. If you've not, it's on Football Ramble Presents, the same feed. Go back and have a little listen. But the great thing about Michael and Johan is they're really into the vision, the idea of doing something for good, of creating this connection between Europe and Africa. So we talked to them a bit about their careers, but also about steps into coaching and imparting some of their wisdom to the next generation. Hope you enjoy it. This is Ramble Meets Michael Essien and Johan Giroux. So, Michael, Chelsea-Arsenal was a big thing back in those days, wasn't it? It was a really intense rivalry.
I mean, it's as you can see, it was very, very intense, and it's always going to be because of the rivalry between the two clubs. But I mean, off the pitch, you know, when we see each other, you know, we show respect to each other.
So did you only start to really get to know each other more at Nordsjælland when you both arrived in Denmark then?
Every time we've met, it's on the pitch, you know, playing against each other. But I mean, when we both end up here, that's when we get to know each other very well. But I didn't know he is a nice guy like this. You know?
So I guess I want to ask what attracted you both here, because like a lot of people will be surprised to see two such big names at Nordsjælland, not one of the biggest names in Denmark. Johan, you first. I mean, you've both known Tom Vernon, the chairman, for a long time. So was he at the heart of that, Johan?
Yeah, totally. I think that Tom and his vision and what he built here in Denmark and for Africa was just, let's say, the great address for me at the stage of my career. You know, I think that at the end of the day, at this time, there is no more about the money or whatever. It's more about learning and having a new experience, but as well, in a way of football that I've been used to with Arsenal, for example. And I think that everything is in place to develop young talent, to learn as a player as well, if I want to be a coach later, maybe in the future. But there is everything in place for a player of my age to learn still about the game. And that's what I loved about the project here. And the long vision, of course, the long vision and long-term goals are as well very exciting. So I think that all those things made me come here.
So we'll come to the long-term goals in a minute. But Johan, it seems like at this experienced point in your career, is that your role? You're almost a coach on the pitch?
I'm trying to be. I think that, you know, there's a very young team here. So you're trying to give them a bit of your experience, trying to talk to the guys about the difficult times as well. You know, I think being a player and being around them, to see them on the pitch and to see them around the pitch is always a good thing for them and a learning curve. And I think that that is an important role for me and for them to have me around. So I think that... Yes, being a coach, I won't say that because first of all, I have to play and I have to try and play good to be an example. But I think that I'm trying to do that with my performance and the way I can speak to the guys.
And Michael, what about you? What led you to Nordsjælland and made you realize that this was the fit for you as you start out as a coach?
I mean, I'll start by saying, I've known Tom a very, very long time because he lived in Ghana for so many years. And obviously, he followed my career since I was 17 up until now. So, we started talking like 5-6 years ago. And then when this whole Nordsjælland thing came and he wanted me to be here, and I said I would come at the right time. At the end, I found myself here. And as Johan said, I mean, what attracted me the most is how the philosophy of the club and how they like to develop the young ones. And obviously, I'm looking to do my coaching badges as well. So, yeah, he gave me this opportunity to be here, to be around the coaching staff, the players, to see how things go, how they do things here and stuff like that. And also, I join in the sessions sometimes with the boys, with the young boys, and you know it's always good to for them to see a big character around them, you know, and they always come by for some advices and stuff like that, and also yeah, I mean it's. The whole project is very good for me for my you know taking my you know transition into the coaching side of the game.
So we'll come to the club's connection with Africa in a little bit. But Michael, have you always known you've wanted to be a coach, or was there a point in your career where you thought, yeah, this is something I can do? Because I think people look at your career and they look at the coaches you've played under, of course, particularly Mourinho, Ancelotti. You must have taken a lot from those guys. What was it working with them that accelerated your desire to become a coach, or was this something that was always in your mind?
Actually, I mean, I didn't think I would make that transition because you know when I was playing, I always say, "Ah, no, I don't want to be a coach." But then, I mean, as thing goes on, you know, when you love the game so much, you always try to be. Be in the game, be around the game and stuff like that. So I think like 2-3 years ago, I said, okay, now, yeah, I'm coming to the end of my career. I want to, you know, learn about the coaching as well, the coaching side of the game. And you know, it will give me the opportunity to be on the pitch, to be around the players and stuff like that. And actually, when I start doing the course, and I started enjoying it, and I said, okay, this is something I want to do. It, so I just have to give in 100% as I've always been doing. So, yeah.
Well, a huge part of both of your jobs at FCN is working with those young players. Johan, if we go back to your development as a player, how do you look back on how you came through in youth football in Switzerland, and how is the experience different for the kids around you at the club now compared to the experience that you went through when you were a teenager?
I think if we look at the difference between Switzerland and here is that, let's say that first of all, we didn't play like a top league football. It was like a second division league in Switzerland, so I didn't really have, let's say, big players with a lot of experience. I had older players with experience in that league, but didn't have the guys who made it to the top. So I think that's like when the transitions that I made from Étoile Carouge to Arsenal, that's where everything changes. Because when I came to Arsenal and you had the big boys like Kolo Touré that I had around me and Thierry who could speak to you on what the journey is and what it takes to make it to the top. And I think that that's my role now, is that to be able to give them the tools, and not only on the pitch, because that they are brave enough and strong enough to do what they have to do, but the mental strength or the disappointment on how to go about it. And I think that's in today's world is very important to have guys who are mentally strong even when things don't go their way.
I mean, when you speak to Tom, of course, he's very passionate about Right to Dream, the academy, and about what it can bring to the club, as well as what the club can bring to the academy. I mean, that idea of that sort of exchange of knowledge, that exchange of information between Africa and Europe, to me is really interesting. So how different do you think that is in terms of experiencing that as an academy scholar as compared to your upbringing, where I'm guessing, well, I guess for both of you, it's very much a case of don't say that much in the dressing room, do as you're told, earn respect over the years, and then you morph into becoming a senior player. I mean, do these young players get more of an opportunity to bring their experiences into the project, do you think?
I think, you know what, the beauty of what he's been doing here is, as you said, I think to bring two different culture together, because you have the African culture and the European culture mixing together. And then it's for the guys to adapt to each other and to create that magic to be able to live together. And I think that here the setup is that everyone has a say, even in the training, even in the tactical approach. The players can be involved and speak their mind if they don't agree with a tactical thinking of a coach. So, like as you said, maybe back in the days where we had to don't really say anything and just go with our job and be able to perform, and even if we were not maybe okay with it, but times changed, and I think that hey, they have all the kids have the right setup to be able to express themselves.
Michael, what about you? When you first came over to Europe as a teenager, what you were, I guess, 18 when you arrived at Bastia?
I turned 18 when I got to Bastia, and I mean, as Johan said, back in the days, it's all about you do as you are told. You know, you don't ask many questions, so you just go with what you have to do. But I mean, here the environment is quite open, and they get the players very much involved, and I think that's also good for them, because it kind of develop them to be. To have the opportunity to speak out and voice out their opinions, and we work together as a team.
How was that leap to senior football for you? If we go back to when you were there, when you arrived to Bastia, and it's different, of course, because it's not mainland France as well. It's different, but how was that as a teenager having to adapt to, I guess, men's football in a different continent?
I didn't look into that very much, because I have only one thing in mind is to play football. So that's all I think about, and so I try to give everything on in training and on the game. If I have my have the chance, I just work hard as I can for the team to to win games. So I mean, I think by doing that kind of developed me in a different way to become a man.
And I guess the environment was different again when you arrived at Lyon. I mean, they're a winning team, winning culture, some big senior players there. So how did you adapt to that? I mean, you're going from playing for a Ligue 1 team to playing for a team that's in Europe all the time, and to being part of a team that's expected to win all the time. So did that really accelerate your development as a young player?
I think it did, because I'm a type of guy. I like to win. I like to win. I hate losing, to say. So I'm very, very much competitive. So when I made that transition into Lyon, I mean, I already have that winning mentality, and I had a great opportunity to play for Lyon, and which they were the best in France at that time. So it kind of developed me very quickly, because I'm a winner. I like to win, and I'm in a team that wants to win everything. So it's and with you look around you with top players, so it made it more. More easier for me to be around.
And of course, Lyon are a club that have always, at the heart of what they do, they develop young players. I mean, you think even after you left, you had Sidney Govou at the time, and after you left, you had Benzema, Ben Arfa. Nowadays, we can talk about Lacazette, Nabil Fekir. What do you think they did right in terms of youth development?
With the names you've mentioned, I mean, they are doing something good. Because I mean, being with the first team, you hardly kind of see the academy boys or the young one. We hardly see them, but I know they are doing their job to develop them. And I remember Ben Arfa and Benzema and Demlo Remy, they always come and. And train with the first team, then they go with the reserves or they go to their age group. So it was quite hard to see them, but every year or so, at least two or three of of the academy boys or the young ones, the reserve players, always make that transition into the first team.
Johan, at Arsenal, Arsene Wenger's whole image is built around developing young players and developing a certain way of playing. How do you think being with Wenger in your formative years affected the way that you look at football and the way you look at how young players should be developed?
I think this is the base for me. I think this is the basics because, as you said, it's a totally different philosophy and totally different view of football. I think you learn so much of being, as you are an academy player, as I came at 16, I had the chance to go through the ranks, for example, under 17 with Steve Bould, and then a bit of the reserves with Nick Benfield. And then when you get to the first team, is everything that you've learned under is the same. And then when you get to that level where you have him as a coach, the way he wants to develop, the way he talks to you, the way he wants things to be done, the way you have to orient it, the way you see the game is totally different things of just being a football player. You're a learner of the game still, and I think that that's what made a difference, and that's what, let's say, if you buy into it, you have more chance to make it than not. And that's why I think I had the chance to play for Arsenal for 10 years because I wanted to learn all the time, and he gave me the tools to be able to do that.
And so what is the relationship with Wenger? I mean, what does he do particularly to develop young players? Because it's interesting, he's never really talked that much, certainly publicly, about tactical details. He doesn't seem to be the same sort of coach as, say, a Pep Guardiola, where every tiny little detail is pored over. What's different about Wenger? What's so special about him that makes you come away thinking, I'm growing as a player?
It's the passion that he puts into his words and the explanation that he gives you. Because I think that we have to remember as well is that now the access to teams is easier. You see the Amazon documentary where you are able to be in and feel and see a Pep Guardiola or a Mourinho. But I have to say that Wenger on the pitch day, on the tactical, was the same. Would give you details and take the players aside to give them a little insight of the things that he wanted to do. And so that's the thing. I think it's a bit of change of the game that makes the difference. But he was quite similar, maybe not, let's say, as with the, let's say, the emotion as Pep, but every word that he said that came out of his mouth was key to the development or even any players that you see that came through his rank. If you look at the Thierry's or the Patrick Vieira coming from Milan or Juventus, the or Cesc, the let's say the progression that they had under him is just unbelievable.
Michael, what about you? Who was the one coach who you sort of had connected with, where you thought, I would like to be able to reach players as a coach in the way that this coach does me?
Well, I mean, I can mention so many coaches because I've played under so many coaches and everyone is different. So I mean, I'll probably say if I can, I would take Mourinho as an example because I was very much connected with him and also Ancelotti as well. But they both are two different coaches. But I mean, they all have the same goals. They're all winners. They want to win, and I mean, they give you the tactical details. They give you they give it to you and make sure it's very clear. So when you're on the pitch, you know what to do. So yeah, it's one of the things I'm gonna, always gonna carry with me, and then hopefully I can transmit that to, into the boys that if one day I become a manager or a coach, then yeah,
head coach AC.
Exactly. if we take it back to Nordsjælland, Johan, of course we've talked about the connection with Africa. You were born in Africa but brought up in Switzerland. is this almost you reconnecting with your African roots in a way, and watching young African players from Ghana and Ivory Coast, where you're from, get this opportunity in Europe?
Totally. I think that I've never really been disconnected, because as I said before, when I got to Arsenal, there were so many African boys, you know, like the Kolo Touré, the Eboué, the Song, Adebayor. So you always had that connection around. But it's true that it's nice to see those young players with big dreams having the chance to, being given the chance to show their talent, you know. And with the background, so the story of everyone is so special, you know, if you get into it and you speak to them. I've heard some things that sometimes is blown away to see the guy still standing and having fun and enjoying himself on the pitch, even though what he went through. So that shows you how people are so strong, and let's say that they don't really get affected by what's been around their life before that, and they just want to make it and be able to provide and enjoy for the family. But it's just so, it's nice to be around that, because as I said, as you said rightly, I can see a bit of myself with big dreams in Africa when I was only crawling on the floor and having a ball every time around me and dreaming of being a footballer. They have the chance here, and it's amazing to see.
But tell us a bit, Johan, a bit more about what that environment is, because it's not just about the football. It's about giving players and people the tools to go forward in life. I mean, I guess you're at a point in your career where you can understand the bigger picture a little bit more. How well do you think the players grasp that? And do you think the environment at Nordsjælland helps them to grasp that, that there's more to life and football's a part of it?
Totally. I think that the platform here, it's amazing for them, because I would say that the bigger picture, of course, is to develop them in the best way so they can go aboard or to bigger clubs ready. But every state of mind, you know, we're talking about obviously the technical aspect, the tactical aspect, but as well the personality of a player. And I think that's very important as well, that we should not forget that every player is a human being and not a machine or a robot. And I think that is something here that they want to listen to the feelings. They want you to tell them if you're not feeling well, if you're not happy, because that's okay. Those emotions are fine. You should be able to perform. But if you don't feel okay, we can speak about it and tell the reason why. So the platform here is very, very, well done to have the best possible athlete and person going forward.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Michael, how different do you think the opportunities are for young Ghanaians and also young Ivorians coming into Through Right to Dream and into Nord Zealand? How different are the opportunities that they have to the opportunities that you had when you were a teenager hoping to make it in the professional game?
It's great, great opportunities for them, because I didn't have that when I was growing up. I have to figure, you know, in a different way. But, I mean, they have, you know, they get them when they are very young. They put them in the academy. And then they kind of, you know, give them all the tools. Then they will bring them to FC Nordjylland. So they go through the same system. And then when they come here, it's the same thing. So it's very good for them, very very great opportunities, and I hope they, you know, they grab it with both hands, and you know, and work towards it to become to have a good career for themselves.
And what sort of effect do you think this could have, the fact that Right to Dream is doing so well in Ghana and being so successful at bringing players over, and you look at players that have been sold on by Nord Zealand or already by, like, Mohamed Kudus, who's gone to Ajax and is doing a great job there. Do you think this is something that could actually help the Ghanaian national team as well?
Well, I hope so. But when these kids grow up, everyone, they become men and everyone goes their way, you know. And, I mean, if they can manage to get all these boys into the national team, it's going to help a lot. But then it's not down to me. But I mean, I'm more, you know, concerned and more focusing on their development, because this, as I said, is a great opportunity for them. And, you know, they have all the tools, everything to make them succeed and have a good career for themselves. And, you know, and also I'm going to touch on this one, because is the Right to Dream is not only about football. They have the educational academical side of the academy as well. So if you go there and you're not good at football and you're good on the academical level, then they push you. So they have, I think Right to Dream have maybe 60 plus students in America, in one of all the, you know, big universities there. So it's not only about football. So,
Michael, do you think that's something that's forgotten sometimes, that in an academy, it is an intensely competitive environment, but not everyone makes it as a pro? I mean, it seems to me that what you guys are trying to do in the academy is form people knowing fully and recognizing fully that not everyone's going to make it at pro level, let alone elite level.
Exactly. Because when people hear academy straight, they think about football. You understand? But I mean, it's, as I said, it's not only about football. And as you said, there's a lot of competitions, and not all of them can become a professional footballers, you know. But I mean, they can, in the academic side, they are very good. So, you know, they push them, they look at the kids and, you know, figure them out where they are very good at, and then they they support them from there. So yeah, it's great thing they are doing.
So Johan, you said how when you spoke to Tom and you thought about the point you were in your career, you were sold on the vision, and we already talked about that kind of exchange between Africa and Europe. How much of the work that you are doing and that the club are doing is about actually providing infrastructure in Africa? Because it always, traditionally, it feels as if European clubs are going prospecting for talents. So they're taking stuff out of Africa, but they're not necessarily putting stuff in. But this project is very, very different, isn't it? Can you explain how that is and how important that is to you?
I think it's very important, and it changed, let's say, the vision a bit of football, because if there is one thing we have to remember is that they were able to buy FC Nordjylland with what came through Africa and not the other way around. And I think that sometimes we tend to forget that the vision here is very simple, is that there is some raw talent in Africa, and you have the chance to exploit in the right way, as you said before, because the thing is, like, you're taking them, you're giving them the chance to become someone or a footballer, but after they're going back to the national team or to, you know, to those kind of things that belongs to Africa. And I think that's a very, very good signal for football, to show that you don't always have to go and buy big name players around to make them great and to become like a figure in the international football. Because now we're talking about FC Nordjylland, but we know what's come next. You know, there is other plans with other places to grow up with the same academy and mindset. So I think that what the point here is to that we have to understand is how everything came together. It came through Africa and not the other way around.
And so, when you look, you touched on it there about identifying with the club as a certain type of way of doing things. I mean, if you look back through the history of football, and, you know, we touched on Lyon before, Michael, and you can touch on Ajax, for example, who've got this reputation of producing young players. Michael, is this something that Nordjylland, in terms of how they're perceived by football fans for what they do on the pitch, is this something that's an advantage, do you think, if you have this academy creating a particular way of playing and a particular way of doing things on the pitch when it gets to first team level?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, because, I mean, as you said, I mean, here it's just to give them the tools, you know, teach them the basics, you know, the tactical, technical aspect of the game. So, I mean, they take that with them. So when they go to different clubs, they already know how it's done, how they have to do it. So it will be more easier for them to adapt to other clubs when they leave. So, I mean, what they are doing is great. I've not really seen something like this. So, I mean, it's a great thing they are doing here. And as I said, the boys should take a very good advantage of it.
And both of you have been at huge clubs before where there's a real pressure to get results. Johan, you're still obviously a player for the team. In terms of the way the supporters feel...
He's my player.
yeah, well, it's all down to you now. If it goes wrong, it's not his fault, it's your fault. Buck stops at the coach. So what sort of pressure is there in terms of results? I mean, obviously there's not the same sort of pressure as there would be at an Arsenal or a Chelsea, but is there more understanding from the supporters because they see what you're trying to do, or is that still that same kind of pressure for results on the pitch, Johan?
I would say that it's hard to know, because I haven't been able to play in front of fans here at the moment, so I don't really know what's the expectation, but what I know is that when you're a football club, you want to have results. I think that goes for anyone. But obviously, as you said, the understanding is a bit bigger, because they know that the club philosophy is maybe, let's say, first or was first to develop players, and that you know that with a very young team, it's always difficult to have some consistency. You know, so I think that there is some understanding. But of course, when you come in, you try and bring in the winning mentality, even though, as you said, it's a bit harder because you know that when you develop and you grow into the game, sometimes you have less consistency than when you have, let's say, 5-6 guys with experience that can be able to get the guys together and hold the strings together. So I think the understanding is there, but obviously I think the club wants to try and go higher, that's for sure.
Well, of course, they've qualified for Europe before and stuff like that. So I guess that's the aim again. But you talked about playing in empty stadiums there. I mean, obviously, this has been a huge shock for, I guess, every footballer and every football fan as well, everything that's gone on over the last year. I mean, it must be an unusual experience for you. So tell us a bit about how it's been for you to play in empty stadiums. And how do you think that's affected some of the younger players who, like, football is their life, and all of a sudden, A, it comes to a grinding halt, and B, it restarts again, but only a half sort of version of what it normally is. How have you found it, and how have they found it?
So I would say that for me, it's been strange, because I've been used to play around a lot of fans, and it's true that now it changes. You have to be able to motivate the guys, motivate yourself. There is not the same adrenaline, because you know that when you go to a away ground, you know, you will hear the fans screaming, or when you're home, you have the support behind you. But I would say that with the experience that I have, I find the tools to motivate myself, because it's, at the end of the day, it's football. But on the other hand, for young kids, I would say that it goes in both ways, because you have guys now who are very young playing with no fans, so I think that it takes the pressure a bit away. So you are more able to express yourself in a way. I think that sometimes when you come into the big stadium with a lot of fans, maybe you get to be a bit tense and you cannot really see in the first few games, obviously, after you get a bit looser and you get used to it. But I think that for some of the kids, there is some positive, because they've been able to play young and to be free. To be free on the pitch, not worrying about fans screaming or whatever. But obviously, they haven't, as you said, experienced the real deal of being in front of 25,000 fans, where they can feel the pressure as well when you are 1-0 up or 1-0 down, when the electricity is in the stadium. So that's something hopefully will come back to normal at some point. But obviously, we have to think about the health first and everything that is most important.
And Michael, how has it been for you as a coach? Because I guess it's a completely different ball game. Maybe players during a game can always at least pretend they don't hear you when you've got a full crowd in. I mean, you know, you've played at not just some huge clubs, but some with really intense atmospheres, like Panathinaikos, for example, where you just can't hear anything in Leofaros. So how has it been for you? Has it been easier in that you can actually get your instructions across to the players? I mean, how has it changed things for you?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it's football. But now, as you said, you can, if I shout, you can't tell me you didn't hear, because the whole stadium can hear me. So at some point, I mean, I think it's good for the coaches, because they can send a message across very quickly, whereby when it's full house, sometimes it's difficult to, you know, for the player to hear on the far side. So, I mean, we have to... Is how it is now. We have to adapt it, and hopefully things get back to normal.
When it does get back to normal, will you have to change the way that you communicate with players, do you think?
Well, it's still going to be the same. If the players in the far end can't hear, you have to send a message through someone to them. So it's always going to be the same. But, I mean, now it's more easier to scream and they get the message across quickly.
So what sort of coach are you on a match day, Michael? Are you someone who's talking all the time, or are you one of those who, once they go over the line, you think, all right, it's your gig now, you deal with it?
No, I don't shout. I don't sit on the bench, but, you know, I kind of, when I'm sitting on the stands with other coaches, I mean, sometimes I scream a little bit, but it's normal to, you know, to push the boys. But other than that, I like when they are off the pitch, then I go, you know, talk in, you know, give some individual talks to the players.
I mean, you're still registered as a player. Are we expecting to see you lining up along Johan at some point this season?
No. I don't think that's going to happen.
You don't think it's going to happen? That's not a definite no, is it?
I don't think it's going to happen. No.
Do you miss it when you're playing with the youngsters, and as you say, you can see those dreams and those hopes of where they're going in the future? Does that make you think of young you and miss it a little bit?
Sometimes, but I mean, I'm very strong-minded person. I know, I mean, it will come to an end at some point, but I mean, I still get the chance to be on the pitch with them, which is, you know, I enjoy doing that. You know, give them some few knocks, you know, tell them to be tough. So, yeah, it's good.
Johan, you're not going to try and persuade him out of retirement, are you?
No, I try. We had a discussion because I think that what he didn't say that his first, when he came first, was to play. Like, the idea of Tom was to make him play. But obviously, I try sometimes to tell him, like, you know, try and give us just a game in the middle.
Well, he did play that time at centre back for Chelsea when John Terry was injured. So maybe he could move back a little bit. What do you reckon?
No, their boys are so fast nowadays. They're so quick.
And so, in terms of tactics, are you a coach, Michael, who wants to get your tactical ideas across, or is it mainly about fitness and athleticism? Is it mainly about, as you say, the basics in terms of skills and positioning? What do you try and concentrate on?
I think what's important for me at the moment is a tactical side of the game, you know, because that's when you can win a game by your tactics. So that's what I'm trying to spend more time on doing, and that's what I'm doing actually. But I mean, when it comes to natural skills, I mean, the boys, they've got the talent. You just have to, you know, fitness, they're fit, they're young, they're very fit. So I mean, the tactical aspect is more important.
Johan, if we talk about the playing side of it for you, I mean, you had that great decade at Arsenal, and then you had some tough times fitness-wise. I mean, do you feel a sort of, I guess, a certain freedom in that you're at a point in your career where, you know, it's not necessarily about earning money. It's maybe not even necessarily about winning trophies, but about A, helping the people around you, and B, sort of, I guess, drinking in the back end of your football career. I mean, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think that's a point, as you said, is like, as well as to be able to play. You know, I think that like the last years have been tough on with injuries, and I think that he started very well. You know, I feel good, and I felt good, and I think that's the first point. And then obviously, when you're in that state of mind, is everything easier to help the other guys. And I think that at the end of the day, you have to take a bit of step back, you know, like a step back and just like let the young players be. And that's the kind of guy I am. You know, I've always been that way. I want to help. I want to give, let's say, the right words at the right moments to give them confidence. And that's the thing that I can do and I can bring. So obviously, being able to play, enjoying, and being able to give the insight of the question as well, like show the young players that even at 34, I'm still working really hard to be able to be on the pitch.
Just to finish, two big questions for both of you. Firstly, what are you hoping for from the rest of this season? And secondly, where do you see the club in 5 years' time? You first, Michael.
We're hoping we can finish, at least if we can finish in Europe, we can get a chance to play in Europe. For me, to see the club in 5 years, hopefully in 5 years' time, the club will be fighting for the top, you know, will be in the top three.
What about you, Johan?
Yeah, I think Michael said everything right. I think that right now we let's say for the end of the season, we have to try and finish in the top six and try to play that in the top half of the league. And I think the next 5 years, I think for me, will be more about, of course, that team, but it's all about the whole project because everything is developing. And I think that the club here will benefit as well a lot from what's going to happen. But obviously, the goal is to be able to compete with the FC Midtjylland and Copenhagen at the top at some point. But that could be even before than 5 years.
Well, look, thank you so much for your time, guys. I wish you all the luck for the rest of the season and at the club. And I'll be keeping up to date with how you're going. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.